to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my co-host and friend, Pia Hugo, former sister-in-law of Cheon, a super apostle of Nar, and a missionary to the Philippines. Pia, it's good to have you on and to talk about the system. We briefly mentioned it last time, and actually we mentioned it a lot last time, but I think people don't understand how complex the system is. When we talk about system and you're talking about church, most people think theology, but there are so many different aspects of the system that you have to think about. There's the entertainment, there's the money, there's the religion, there's the effects, there's the music, there's all of these different things in the system. And For me, I get really shocked about just the money. I grew up in a world where we were trained to believe, because he said it, that Branham was one of the initiators of this revival. He was the foremost leader of it, and he had given himself the stage persona of a very poor Kentucky hillbilly. None of it was true, but he would say things like, "I've never taken an offering in my entire life," and I found newspaper articles where they're carrying suitcases of money out of the revivals, right? And I'm scratching my head thinking, how can that be? But the kicker for me, I heard a recording that they forgot to edit out, apparently, and it had William Branham in it, but he was being introduced by Franklin Hall. Branham and Hall are the two men that basically were the catalyst for Latter Rain. And Franklin Hall says, "What are you going to start with, Brother Branham?" And William says, "I don't." And then he cuts him off and says, "Money. You're going to start with money, right?" And it's right there, plain as day, on recording. That was it. The focus was money. But that is lost to time. Not many people know it because the system has changed. They want to kind of conceal the money part, and they want to show the religious part. And to do that, you have to have a stage persona part. So let's talk deeper about the system.
Yes, let's do that, John. I am so happy to be back with you. And I call the NAR system a well-oiled money-making machine. That's what it is. And the fact that so many Christians do not talk about the money-making aspect of this system, it almost shocks me, you know, because it is such a huge part. And when somebody gets caught red-handed, I mean, that's funny what you just said about William being caught red-handed. Like, there you go. And you would think that people would start to be like, "Oh, wait a minute, did he just say money? This is about money?" Like, there's this guy named Sean Foyt. Maybe you've heard of him. And, you know, he's very famous, definitely got a lot of notoriety in 2020, right, when he was defying all these COVID lockdown rules, and he was just going from state to state to state, and he was having these open air, you know, concerts, worship concerts. And what people don't realize was that he made millions. Well, most people were worried about, "Hey, do I still have a job after COVID?" I mean, honestly, for me as a high school teacher, that was my last year, my last full year teaching. I finally retired in 2021 because, you know, like, there were so many budget cuts and there were so many, you know, really awful economic effects of COVID that, you know, a lot of people did lose their jobs. But meanwhile, here's Sean Foyt. He's raking in the money because you've got all these, you know, NAR youth brainwashed, you know, like movements going on, and there was nobody calling it out back then, at least not that I know of.
And that's one of the common threads that most people who are impacted by this, they all get that notion. Nobody's calling it out, right? We see all these people, if this massive group of people are following it, it must be of God. But the problem is, you have to look back at Dr. Stephen Hassan's BITE model of authoritarian control. Behavioral control, information control, thought control, thought manipulation, emotional manipulation, emotion control. The information control is key. There were actually people that have been calling this out before it was even the post-World War II healing revival that birthed all of this that we're talking about. But when you're in the movement, anything that is critical is omitted from the history, and anything that is positive is the only history you're given. And that's truly, that's information control. I was a little surprised when I went back in history and found that not only were people calling out everything that was the origins of the New Apostolic Reformation, it actually caused a split in the Assemblies of God so wide that there were, basically there were two Assemblies of God. There was one that supported the revival themes, the revival healing evangelists, etc., the latter rain. And then there was the other side that frowned upon it and said, this is getting out of control. And those who were saying this is getting out of control, if you look at the history and look at what happened after Latter Rain, it seems like they lost the battle. That's really what happened here. So this is kind of a big deal. And I look at this whole thing a little bit differently. Bob Scott and I, we often talk about, we throw these terms around, but one of them is it's like Game of Thrones. This is a game of these empires. These people are building kingdoms instead of churches. That's really the problem. And because of the New Apostolic Reformation's networking scheme, each one of these empires are connected to each other. And, you know, Che On's just one of many empires in the New Apostolic Reformation. He may have one of the larger empires, I don't know. But because of his empire, other empires can exist. And this flow of information, this this limiting of information, but the flow of the doctrines is the key point. These doctrines flow through these networks, and these empires support each other. And so understanding the empires is very critical to understanding how all of this works.
So I'm just going to describe they're empires, for lack of a better word. Each one of them are actually the kings of their own little kingdoms, if I can describe it that way. So let's start with Che. Che started Harvest Rock Church in 1994, along with his buddy Lou Engel and other NAR pastors. And in 1996, he launched HIM, or Harvest International Ministries. And in his own words, he started it because he received a word of the Lord from respected prophet Cindy Jacobs. Because, you know, if Cindy Jacobs says it's going to happen to you, it's going to happen to you. So because of what she said, he started HIM. And Cindy Jacobs said he would be the father of an entirely new movement, a network of networks created to train and raise up the last day leaders. A lot of people outside of NAR don't even know who he is. They've never heard of him, but he is quite famous, quite successful. And I mean, I think that's why he's so confident that he's going to win the governorship of California. Even though, may I add, he's not on the ballot. And people ask me this all the time. Like, how can he even be the governor if he's not on the ballot? Well, let me tell you, there's this thing called write-in. So all you have to do is write in his name. And I heard him say, you know, I was listening to one of his campaign programs, and he's like, it's only six letters, C-H-E-H-A-N, so easy to write in his name. And yeah, so there you go. And you might ask, Well, why is his name not on the ballot? Because apparently he missed the deadline for turning in his last five income tax returns, the last 5 years of his income tax returns. His campaign manager, whom I know personally, just, oh my gosh, she forgot and she missed the deadline. Like, really? Do you forget something like that? I don't know. Or maybe he doesn't want people to look at his tax returns. I mean, I don't know.
It's my opinion, and that's just my opinion, but he probably does not want even to be governor. But if you talk a big talk, you play a big game, you attract a lot of people, that's part of the system. That's one little wheel that's spinning in the system.
Sure.
And then when you don't get it, you still use that as part of the system. The devil was out to get us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, because it was Cheon who went against these COVID rules and sued Governor Newsom, you know, and he won. He won. I don't know how many millions of dollars he won from the state of California. So now, yeah, that is what he's saying. He's saying, well, they didn't want me to, you know, to run for office because, you know, I am the one bringing in God's, you know, like strategies for California, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, you're absolutely right. When he was disqualified from running, he had already amassed something like $850,000 in campaign, you know, funds. And some people were asking, what are you going to do with that money? And, you know, are you going to give it back to your donors? And he said, oh, no, don't you worry about that. I am still going to keep fighting this fight. So, all right, there you go.
And I want to point out how important all of this is to my research. And all of it is interconnected more than people realize. Whenever you start to connect the dots, you start to see that it's not really something new that's being created. This is just an emerging, evolving mess that came from the latter rain movement, post-World War II healing revival. And even that mess came from other messes in the past that I've examined some of these. But Cheon is strongly connected to Larry Tomczak, which I've briefly mentioned before. I'm still digging into a lot of what happened with Tomczak, but I have mentioned him. I'll pull up a newspaper article here. This is an advertisement for Cheon. It's asking, can a young Oriental American son of a Baptist minister from Baltimore, Maryland, successfully find his place in life? That's how he's being advertised. And it says, Che is a Bible teacher at both Gathering of Believers and TAG, which is important. We're going to go a little bit deeper with this TAG in the course of this podcast series. But TAG, which is Take and Give Christian Ministries in Washington, D.C., that's another focal point that we're getting into. A lot of this has to do with politics, and you're going to find a lot of what we're talking about heading directly towards Washington, D.C. It says he has returned from a speaking engagement and a teaching seminar at Louisiana State University. So when you know all of these people, how they're interconnected, know their business organizations, how those are connected, it gets a little bit weird because some of the people are, you might consider, good Christian men. Some you might consider, well, that's not really a good person they're with. And I'm still trying to determine and distinguish which is which in all of this mess that I'm wading through. But Take and Give was, Larry Tomczak was a big part of this Take and Give in Washington, D.C. It was a large charismatic teaching and worship meeting that was held in Washington, D.C. I think it was during the 70s, if I remember correctly. But anyway, Tomczak was a big part of this. Tomczak and C.J. Mahaney, they were leaders in this. So they were connected directly to Cheon. Where it gets a little bit odd in my research, everybody is familiar with my trail of research up to John Wimber through the shepherding movement. I've had quite a few podcasts and discussions on that. There was a point in time in which the shepherding movement, which is another name for this is discipling, which Tomczak was a big part of, the shepherding movement was coming under exposure for its authoritarian control structures, widespread abuse. There's so many problems with this. In fact, you can just go to Wikipedia and type in shepherding movement, and you can see all of the many, many problems that you can just see. This is not a good Christian structure, and it's dangerous. Well, there was a point in time, John Wimber was involved with key figures in this, and he, in fact, on the New Wine magazine, right as the shepherding movement is being exposed, I'll pull up the cover here, John Wimber is one of a few names who were trying to bring unity to all of the church leaders, which included the shepherding. And he's actually advertised on the shepherding magazine, New Wine magazine, shepherding publication. So he is supportive, at least, and he's working with many of these people in these revival events. So he is connected to people like C.J. Mahaney, which I've discussed that in the past. I've also got, if you look at this New Wine cover, you've got Kenneth Copeland, you've got John Jimenez, Charles Simpson, Simpson being one of the founders of the shepherding movement. So this is bringing unity to an authoritarian structure. That's the key point I want to emphasize here. And if you realize that the shepherding movement was spawning off all of these different people with this discipling theme, and then understand the authoritarian control structures in NAR, you begin to understand that this was really the framework that developed what enabled NAR. It's not that NAR is the shepherding movement or a continuation of it, but they use the framework of authoritarian control, which is disgusting if you really dig under the hood and look at what it is. Well, Tom Zach was also, I'm pulling up another magazine. This is his publication, and it's got a big advertisement for a pastor's conference. Planned to be there March 17th through 21, 1987, in Washington, D.C. area. And it's got pictures of various people, including Larry Tom Zach and C.J. Mahaney. These people are mobilizing what was being described, John Wimber's words exactly, we're building an army. Well, it gets odd when you think that that army was being mobilized and mobilized in Washington, D.C., especially when you consider the political themes that have emerged in the New Apostolic Reformation. Cheon is just one component. He's one cog in this big system, this big engine that's spinning NAR. He's just one cog. But those cogs connect directly to Washington, D.C., down to your local churches, all spread through this New Apostolic Reformation apostolic network framework.
Okay, next is Lou Engel. Now, mind you, I still have a lot of respect for Lou. When I was going through my divorce, he actually showed me compassion. You know, him and his wife. And so I think as a person, I can't really say anything bad about Lou or his wife, Therese. But I think, again, it's the system, right? We're focusing on the system. So Lou Engel is the founder and main leader of two youth-oriented movements called the Call and the Send. The Call was founded in 2000. And it began as a massive prayer and fasting movement that held large stadium gatherings across the United States focused on revival. So, almost every large stadium gathering, except for the Promise Keepers, there was that movement called the Promise Keepers, but any youth focused large stadium gathering, I'm going to say maybe in the last 20 years, it was Lou. Lou was the one behind that. And again, think about that. Who can attract that many people? That is how convincing and how charismatic Lou Engel is. And the other one is called The Send. And this was born out of a 2016 gathering known as the Azusa Now, when they were, celebrating, I think, the 100th year anniversary of the Azusa Street Revival. And it transitioned from just focusing on prayer to mobilizing youth for missionary work and evangelism. It was founded by a coalition of leaders, Lou Engle, of course, Andy Bird, Youth with a Mission, and I know you've been covering some of the not so good stories about YWAM. I have my own stories, by the way. Maybe we'll get to that later. Brian Brent of Circuit Riders, Daniel Kalenda of Christ for All Nations, Michael Koulianis, Jesus Image. And isn't Michael like the son-in-law of Benny Hinn, if I'm not mistaken? Like, they're all related. They're all related. They're all connected. And Todd White of Lifestyle Christianity. So it's like the who's who in the charismatic and youth ministry and missions and evangelism ministry today. So all those organizations, we can trace it all back to Lou Engle.
I want to go back and emphasize something you said, because it is really important as we continue into this. You're about to introduce Lou Engle, and you said, this is a great guy, and then got into, you know, your description of him. Every single person that I have interviewed so far who has mentioned Lou Engle, that's what they all say. This is a great guy. This is a really good guy. And then some of them are a little bit shell-shocked. How could a good guy do something that involved the indoctrination and sometimes destruction of several people and several lives? How could those two be connected? And they begin to question the good guy part. I want to stress the fact that we're looking at the system, not the guy. And every person that I look at and interview, every person that I investigate, that's really what I'm looking for, is how does it connect from a systematic standpoint? Because the people that get involved many times are good people. The system changes them, and that's really key to understand. Whenever you think back to, well, even my own experience, I'll share some of mine. I was pretty close with one of William Branham's sons. My family was really close to William Branham's sons and daughters. My father grew up with playing with one son, my uncle with the other son, my aunts and their sisters playing with Branham's daughters. We knew the Branham family pretty well. And I would say that the Branham son that I knew him well enough to know I really liked him. He was a great guy. And we had some private and intimate conversations about things that he kind of struggled with whenever he was in the movement. And this is really the right-hand man to Branham, if you really know the complexities of how Branham, the system worked. Until Branham died, this Billy Paul was right at his side. So whenever I began to understand that what I came from was really, really destructive, it bothered me, because I started looking at all of the people who were involved in creating this system that could destroy lives. And I started looking at them with disgust. And it took me a really long time to get over that. But the problem is, they're good people sometimes caught up in a bad system. And the bad system can either make a good person turn evil or make an evil person turn worse. That's the scary part of all of this. So whenever I'm talking about people like Cheon, Lou Engle, I'm not really looking at the person. I'm looking at, okay, how does this fit into the bigger picture, and where does this all go? That's really what I'm looking at. But as it relates to this podcast, think about the money-making aspects. Sometimes you can have a really bad person who is doing it so much for the money that he creates this personality, and that personality is a kind, genuinely friendly personality. Sometimes when you get to know the people off stage, you're like, that's not really what I see off stage. This is not a good person. An example of this, and I won't give a name, I knew somebody who everybody thought was just the friendliest person ever. And I was in their house and I listened to a phone call. They literally made a support representative on the phone start crying because they were just being, they didn't use cuss words because they were against cuss words, but what they said was worse than cussing to this person. And I was listening to it thinking, oh my gosh, that's not the persona that they give out. So whenever people say, this is a nice guy, I take it with a grain of salt. It may or may not be. This is a nice person from the outward appearance, who's in a system that can either be covering it up or making somebody who is genuinely nice turn out to be pretty bad. And it all goes back to money.
Yeah. Well, you know, to prepare for this podcast, because I knew that we were going to focus on, you know, the money-making aspects. So I have these, how many are there? Six. How shall we say these things? They're six ways, I guess, that the wheels are allowed to turn, the cogs, you know, in order for the cogs to function properly, these six things need to always be in place.
We can call them the six mountains.
Well, people might mistake that for the seven mountains, so we'll talk about the seven mountain mandate later, because that is a big one. But I'm going to say that these are six things that are in every NAR church. They're inserted in almost every sermon. And, okay, I don't know what we're going to call them, but here's number one. Prosperity-based messaging, right? It's all about getting the promotion, getting the favor from God. And they'll say things like, you've got to sow a seed. You know, for every 1,000, you get 10,000. So why don't you sow 10,000 so you can get 100,000? You know, like just ridiculous preachings like that. And promising of supernatural returns on donations. I think this is the most heartbreaking. When I hear about, you know, people with cancer, people, you know, with terminal diseases, you know, people who've been in wheelchairs for decades and they're just so desperate for their healing. And they go to these, you know, miracle crusades, or they're just watching in TV, you know, and they hear these promises from these prosperity, you know, gospel preachers. And of course, they're not going to get healed. Like, I don't know. I shouldn't say, of course, like, I still believe in miracles, but I'm going to say, I don't know what the statistics are, but it is quite low, right? I think we can agree on that. So, yeah, I think it's very dangerous when giving is manipulated through fear, guilt, or exaggerated promises.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. You mentioned the exaggerated promises, and that's something that when I was in the revival culture, we were always chasing a miracle. It didn't matter how big, how small. If we could say that something happened and it was beyond our control, we would go for it. And we'd never think about the cause and effect. Sometimes there would be a natural cause and effect and you could easily explain what happened, but we would say, no, that was God. That was much bigger than me. And it may have been God. I'm not saying that it wasn't, but there's often a cause and effect, but the exaggeration's where it turns into a big problem, because whenever you listen to some of the stories, and I've done this a few times in Branham's recordings, but you can go through almost any revival leader and do the same thing. Watch how the story begins. Go back through all of their writings, their recordings, their speeches, their sermons, their letters, etc. Find how something originally began and watch how it ended up. Because usually when it ended up, it's this great big explosive thing. And whenever it began, it was this little tiny small thing that, yes, it might have been of God, but why embellish it? Why do you need to add all of these miraculous details that some of them aren't even true? I started doing that to try to uncover what was truth and what was fiction in the movement. And the problem with all of the exaggerations and embellishments, because it's been embellished and because there are all of these fictional details, often you don't believe the truth. Like, some of the things actually could have happened, but I don't believe them. And I don't, because I see all of the lies that are associated with it. When you add something that isn't true to embellish a truthful fact, you turn the truthful fact into a lie. But it goes beyond the leader, and that's the point I want to drive at here. In this type of movement, because the people have been indoctrinated to do this, the people do the same kind of things. If they get some ailment, they will say, it is the worst thing, I nearly died. I was in the hospital, they didn't know if I was going to live. And you go, and it might have been a toothache. It's just really odd when you get out of the movement and you look backwards at the way things were, you just wonder, what was wrong with us? Why did we do this? And to the people, like, if there was an innocent bystander who's listening to two people talk who are in this revival culture, who knows the background details, they'll think, that person's just lying through their teeth. I was there. That was just a toothache. But that's how your mentality is when you're in the movement. It's all exaggerated. And for me, if everything is exaggerated, it turns it into something that isn't true. So when I look at the Pentecostal Charismatic Movement, NAR, I look at the fruits of it, and I see the fruits aren't true, I have to question the origins if the fruits aren't true. So when you connect all of those dots and pieces, you go back to something that it actually may have been true. There may have actually been something that was astounding in the inception of some of these movements, but does it mean it was of God if they had to embellish it? And number two, why would they embellish the truth? Why? That's what people who are untruthful do. So for me, that's a big, big deal. But not to hijack your six mountains.
The second is celebrity pastor culture. We've already been talking about this. There's a reason why so many people want to enroll in Rick Joyner's university, or they go to these, you know, stadium events sponsored by Lou Engel. Or these people vote for Cheyenne for governor of California. It's because they're celebrities. They're just that famous. All right, number three, constant fundraising cycles. So that includes building campaigns. Like, how many buildings does a church need? Like, I don't know, some of the most anointed meetings I've been to myself have been small, and they occurred in people's houses. But for some reason, these mega churches, you know, I guess because they're constantly building schools, daycare centers, coffee shops, their own gas station, like, it's like a mini city sometimes for these mega churches, you know? And then, of course, there's always these special offerings, right? Because they're going to go to this country or that country. And subscription-style donor programs where, you know, nowadays it's just that QR code, right?
Yeah.
Just swipe. And boom, you know, that's how easy it is to give your thousands, ten thousands to these churches. Number four, volunteer labor replacing healthy structure. So we talked a little bit about this, the burnout, the exhaustion of the volunteers, and the reason why so many volunteers keep saying yes is because they're taught what? Exhaustion equals holiness, right? Saying no is a rebellion. And three, serving leadership is serving God. So because these three are constantly being like ingrained into your head, you wouldn't even dream of saying no, especially if your senior pastor calls you. And because Jay was my senior pastor, he would often call me, you know, to do this and that for him.
And that goes back to something that I've been talking about a few times recently. The movement tries to over-spiritualize everything. And I mean everything. If you can turn it into an angel, turn it into a demon. But more than that, because of the way that the Bible is interpreted, I'll say it like that, because of the way it is interpreted, they want to make it so that you, the listener, can plug yourself into the picture that's being painted by the Bible and make you as great as one of the figures in the Bible. And the best way to do this is to become a martyr. So with the revival culture comes the martyr culture. People will, as martyrs, they will push themselves until they go to their limit, and then they go so far beyond it that they actually need help, you know, from God to pick them back up, because they have overexhausted themselves. They burnt themselves out. It drives people to health issues because they push themselves so hard. I've mentioned a few times, we've talked about it with Jenny in YWAM, how she pushed herself, believing that she was martyring herself because of the movement. The movement, it's not that they tell you to do this outright. It's not that they say, go kill yourself for us. We want you to go kill yourself for us. But they will give you a biblical example of somebody who may have died, or somebody who did push themselves until they got into some trouble or health issues, etc. They will lift that up as the example, and then they'll frame it in such a way, now this person, they went to that extreme, what will you do for God? And you know, that's a good thought if you put it into its proper context, but not everybody is in the same situations as the biblical figures that did this. Not everybody is in the situation where they need to martyr themselves, but the movement, because they over-spiritualize everything, they push you to martyrdom.
There you go. Number five, fear-based retention. So I think this is true of all cults, right? If you leave this cave, you don't know what's out there. It's best that you just stay here where it's safe, where we can protect you. We can control what you see and hear, because remember my first interview with you, I told you I didn't know any of these secular songs because I wasn't even allowed to, you know, to listen to Madonna or Michael Jackson, you know, like I was an 80s kid, but I was probably the only 80s kid who didn't really listen to, you know, Madonna or Michael Jackson. So fear-based retention is when we're taught that leaving means leaving God's protection, losing one's calling. You're going to be spiritually deceived, and this is the big one, you are going to come under God's judgment.
And that's a big one that goes hand in hand with the martyr culture that I was talking about. You have the martyr culture, but you also have the whip of fear to keep them in that. In other words, if you martyr yourself, you're going to go to heaven. If you don't, you're going to come under the judgment, so therefore you must martyr yourself. It's this vicious, vicious cycle. And when you think of this as a money-making machine, if you spin the mechanics into this spiritual coercion that they're doing, the point is the fear becomes one of the gears that protects the financial system. That's really the key to understand. If it wasn't for money, I don't think they would even need these whips of fear, because if you were, let's say it like this, say you're in a movement that is true, and it is the most righteous thing, it is exactly like they're advertising, this is the truth. You leave the movement, When you leave, you're not giving them your money, of course, but when you leave the movement and you start exploring and you go to a few different churches and you find out, wait a minute, everything that they said that I left was true, you're going to go back to it because that was the truth and you found the faults. They don't want you to do this. They don't want you to go explore because while you're exploring, you're not giving them the money. That's really what it boils down to. If they knew that they had the truth, they would let you go explore and say, see, look, it's you found that what I'm saying is true. Come back and join us. But instead, they cut you off. And that's another fear tactic. When you leave, suddenly you are no more. You don't exist in our minds. You are abhorrent to God because you have left us to go explore. Is this thing that we're telling you true?
So anyway, then it kind of came up with four examples of these ministers who preach the prosperity gospel. Most famous of them all, Kenneth Copeland. $300 to $400 million is his net worth these days. He's considered the wealthiest pastor in America. He's got his own private plane. Do you know why he prefers private planes over commercial planes?
No.
I'm going to quote this. He said, because commercial planes are like a long tube with a bunch of demons. He actually said that. Like, oh, no. I don't want to be around ordinary people because they're all demonic. I am so pure and holy. I need my own private plane. So that is the insanity of Kenneth Copeland for you.
If you're watching the YouTube version of this, I put the magazine cover up again to show that when John Wimber is pushing for unity, he's pushing for unity with people like Kenneth Copeland. He's got the shepherding guys who have the authoritarian control. That's one gear that's spinning. He's got the prosperity guy, Kenneth Copeland. That's one gear spinning. He's got his movement, which is spinning, and it will spin off into IHOP KC, some other things. All of these cogs in this system are spinning for their designated purpose. So whenever I have people contact me and one person, one leader, one cog that's spinning just happens to have the presence of being humble, of being sincere, being worshipful, you have to remember there's still a cog spinning, and you don't know is what you're seeing the stage persona that they're putting on, the air that they're putting on. Like Lou Engle, this might be a really good guy, but look at the system he's in. Look at the stage presence that all of the people in the system have. You really have to question and make sure, is this really a good person or are they just putting on an act? Because whenever that cog is spinning, it's turning other cogs, and every cog in the end is spinning out money. That's really, I hate to say it, but that's really what's happening here. This is a money-making machine, and you've got the good cogs, you've got the bad cogs, but everybody's working together to keep this engine running because it's dumping out more money than we can ever imagine.
Number two, Benny Hinn, net worth 40 to 60 million. He has a 10,000 square foot mansion. He's got a bunch of Mercedes Benzes. And of course, let's not forget the private jet.
And I'll mention with Benny Hinn, this is a cog that is spinning, you know, just like the other cogs. But think of these cogs like this. They are spinning financially right now, but they're also spinning historically, because if you take the historical background away from it, the whole system just collapses. It doesn't exist. Benny Hinn is one of the people, you've probably seen it on several of the different channels talking about this. He's one of the people who is really respecting Branham as a true prophet of God, a true miracle worker. And he gives all of these examples. And if you listen to our Revival History series, almost every example that he is giving about William Branham and the complete miraculous details, he is giving examples that have been fully debunked. They're not even true. But if you take away Branham from the system, you pulled this big cog out that helped with the creation of this engine. And you cannot pull that cog out. That's why all of these guys will continue forever to lift up what they call, quote unquote, God's generals. You take one of these generals out, you've taken a cog out of the financial engine, and they can't allow this. If you pull the one gear out, all of the gears stop spinning. That's really how this works. Benny Hinn is just one of the people who are doing this. There are many other cogs that they go back and they support the historical cogs as well.
Sean Foyt, I already told you, you know, he's something else. He's being sued right now. He's being sued by a California businessman named Steve Bray. And he is being accused of using $250,000, which this Steve Bray donated to him in August of 2023, expecting it to fund 10 specific stops on Sean Foyt's Let Us Go Worship concerts, and instead he used it to buy personal property.
I'm glad you brought up the property, because that's something that fully caught me off guard. Whenever you start looking into all of these people, you know, they give this stage presence of just being a humble servant of God, and you don't really think about the money that's moving behind the scenes and where it is moving. Property is one of those places that it isn't that apparent. It's not visually apparent. They can go buy property in some other country, for example, and you don't even have a way to go find where it is that they bought what they did. Fortunately, some of them are just so extravagant that they buy their properties in the United States, and you can easily do some property searches and find it. But you look back through the history of this movement, all of the many people who are making millions of dollars, bringing in some of them, I want to say some of them have billions on their record if you do the math of what the money was worth back then and what it is now. What do you do with all this money, right? You don't even need all this money. And how do you hide it so that people don't realize that you have that much? You can invest it, but you're not having fun with your money. So people will buy properties. And none of the people who they've been convincing to be a humble, poor servant of God, none of them really know it. So they might go on a mission trip, for example, and the mission trip just happens to be next to one of the properties they own. And they go have a nice little vacation in their property home. That's how all of this works. And I didn't think about it, because we were trained to shut off critical thinking, but we were trained to believe that God was so involved with the movement, money really didn't matter. It doesn't matter. You won't need your money because we're about to leave this earth. But give me all your money, says the leader. That's how all this works.
And of course, last but not least, my former brother-in-law, Cheon. I'm just going to say it this way. I know about his luxury vacations. They go to Hawaii every single year, and they go to many other beautiful destinations because I'm friends with his kids on Facebook. And I see where they go, and there was at least two times where my kids got to go because it was this family, you know, big reunion. And yeah, I mean, it was very nice that their Uncle Che and Aunt Soo An wanted to treat them. But, you know, and of course, my kids have been invited to birthday parties and weddings. It's always very lavish. And he does live in a gated community here in Los Angeles. So, I mean, I bring up these four men. Of course, we could go on and on and on, but that's just an example.
And I'll say it like this so that people understand. I am not against people making money. I could really care less if the guy lives in a gated community, if he has millions, billions of dollars. I really don't care. As a businessman, that is your goal. For me, whenever I ran my business, I would have loved to have had as much as some of these ministers have. I never made it that big because it takes a lot of work, a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of growth to grow a legitimate business in that way. There are just so many aspects to business. It's complicated. It's really hard. That's why a lot of these people get into this system, though. It is much, much easier to make that kind of money if you put yourself into a cog into this big engine. Because once you're in that cog, you have all of the other cogs who are supporting you. And that engine, it's a finely tuned engine that it has a history of making money. It would be like, so if I'm a businessman, say instead of starting a business that's brand new and it does some sort of, I did consulting, say it's a business that sells cogs, for example. I'm selling cogs and I'm starting out as a business, but I don't have a name established. It's going to take me a long time to grow my business up to the point of some of the other cog makers. I'm thinking Cogswell Cogs, which is kind of funny, if you know the Jetsons. So the problem is that is a difficult path. It's a difficult journey for a businessman to take, and it's ambitious, and it takes a lot of work, a heck of a lot of work. I can assure you, to start a business is a lot of work. On the flip side, had I been just a little bit devious and mischievous and downright unethical, I'll just go on and say it, I could have plugged myself into the ministry, especially because of my family name. I could have put on a charismatic stage act. I could have played on the heartstrings of the people and said, oh, this is the greatest move of God, and we need funding for X, Y, and Z. People are going to give me money just so easily. It would be, if I wanted to start a business and I wanted to make money quick, this is the get-rich-quick scheme, because the engine has already been built. All you have to do is plug yourself in to all of the other businesses. So now take my example of my Johnswell Cogs, not Cogswell Cogs. Say that instead I'm going to plug myself into a partnership with a sprocket company with all of these different companies. I'm going to plug myself into a pre-existing business engine that would kickstart and that would grow my business faster, because I'm plugging myself into an engine that already exists. The problem is the business engine still takes a lot of work to do it, takes a lot of work to grow it. But if you think of the quote unquote spiritual engine that's running, that's been established, it's not that much work. You just simply put on a suit and tie. Well, even in today's NAR, you don't even need to wear a suit. You just wear a fancy shirt. You wear your fancy shirt, get on stage, make the people fear that they're going to hell, give them something to cry about, give them some emotion, and then ask for their money. And that's all it takes. That is literally all it takes with the engine that they have built.
When I say NAR is a money-making machine, I know what I'm talking about. These facts are not just from the internet. Like, I've been to their homes. Like, I remember my son, when he was a teacher at Comenia School in North Carolina for Morningstar Ministries, there was a teacher's retreat. And because he knew that I was such a Rick Joyner's fan, he FaceTimed me and he's like, hey mom, guess where I am? And he shows me, you know, a beautiful home and like this mansion and like, wow, like, is that like a hotel? And he laughed and he said, no, this is Rick Joyner's house. So I don't know. It used to not really bother me before. Like you said, somehow it did not compute, like, because they're still so anointed. They're saving so many souls, John. Like, they are so needed in these last days, right? That's what matters, right? And so because you see how successful they are, they're thriving. All these people are, you know, populating their churches, their schools, their universities, their conferences, their, you know, services. Like, how could all these people be wrong? And maybe, hey, I wouldn't mind a Mercedes-Benz in my garage. I wouldn't mind living in a mansion, private jet. Why not? And unfortunately, if they target young men like that, and I'm going to say men because usually they're men, these older men who have been in the system and the big cogs, they're always looking for smaller cogs, right, to train and to raise up. And they don't even like they don't even hide that fact. They're constantly recruiting among teenagers and 20 somethings. And it's obvious because they're the most impressionable. You know, they're like me. I was 19 years old, in love with Jesus. All I wanted was to give my whole life to Jesus and to preach the gospel.
Exactly. And that's really the problem for me. Like I said, I don't have a problem at all with people making money. I don't have a problem with people wanting to get rich. I don't have a problem with people getting rich. As a businessman, that's your goal, right? That's your ambition. You want to get rich. I never made it that far. I wish I did. But think of how this engine works. Say that my John's Will Cogs was my target customer for John's Will Cogs is the poor person who can't afford to even buy a cog. And I'm going to make my entire business strategy off of targeting that person, or a person who's just too sick to even make it to the store to buy a cog, or who suffers severely when they come to buy a cog, who suffers when they use one of my cogs. Think what kind of a person I would be if I did this. That's an awful business strategy. But when you take it into the quote-unquote religious realm, that's exactly what they're doing. Most of these people who have gotten rich have gotten rich off of the backs of people who couldn't afford to make the other person rich. I have a huge problem with this. Some of the people, if you look through the history of this movement, go all the way back to the healing revivals. There were people who were so sick, many of them died. Many of them died convinced that they were healed. Many families watched this. And they gave so much money. We've got examples in the Revival History series of people who were donating thousands of dollars, and then they died. And the people who got rich off of this were getting rich off of the deaths of the poor people. That's how bad this is. So whenever I'm thinking of an engine that is being built to make money, and I'm trying to stamp on that engine, on this big picture, this engine with all of these gears and all of these different mechanisms to keep the engine moving. Picture the brand of the engine, if you were to stamp on it the name of Jesus. And then think of what Jesus would see if he looked down and saw this engine. What would he think? It boggles my mind that people can do this and believe that they're doing this for God. It shows me that they're doing this for the engine, and the engine is spitting out money at a rate that goes beyond what any normal business could possibly do. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.